بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Friend of mine
was here some years ago.
So he was speaking about dry lemon, Schweppes dry lemon. So I asked him, what's so great about it? This is no, you have to acquire taste to appreciate and enjoy it. You acquire the taste and you want it. And you may become dependent. But you didn't acquire the taste, you know what it is. So when you come to Zughanuddin, then what do you come for? Do you come for increasing your ibadat? Or do you come just to enjoy the company? Or do you, what's the actual purpose behind it? What's the underlying reason? So they say, it is to acquire the taste. Zauq hasil karna. Then they say, in a madrasa, they put you through the paces and they will teach you faraz, wajib, sunnat, sunnat muakkada, mustahab, makruh, makruh tahrimi, haram. I'll show you all these things here. But now, showing you doesn't mean that you have the spirit to do it, the drive, the motivation and the spirit to do it. You know it is there. Sunnat, mustahab, wajib, faraz, you know it. But just knowing it doesn't give you the drive. You know, this is not right, I mustn't look at it. I know what a destroyer it is, how it will spoil the heart if I look at these gadgets, etc. I know about it. But to have that drive and that strength and the courage just to throw it. So one is to know, and one is to have that iman, call it the courage, with the, call it the determination to chuck these things up and to adopt the right. So this is called zauq. That's the one aspect of zauq, and the more important aspect of zauq. And the second aspect of zauq is to look at their frame of thought. See, how they think, how they view things. It may be we have a certain perception, a certain understanding, we may view something in a certain way. But they view it in a different way. So now, to adopt their view, because what we understand of them is, they were closest to the Sunnah, they were closer to Allah Ta'ala, they were closer to the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, so their understanding, their outlook, their vision obviously will be better than ours. Not that they are infallible, they won't make mistakes, but overall, by and large, their sight, their understanding would be better than ours. And look at one saintly person comes to a masjid. So the imam says to him, that what do you do for a living? So the saintly person, he got up and he repeated his asr namaz. So the imam says that I have one question, I got two questions to ask. One is, what you doing for a living? And number two, why did you repeat this namaz? You know, after asr there is no nafal, so you repeated your faraz, why did you repeat the namaz? It says, I'll answer it with one answer, one line, and that will be sufficient for both. It says, when you ask, what do I do for a living, the tone that you asked, I understood that you don't have the belief in Wama Min Dabba. there is no single living creature, but Allah Ta'ala has taken it on Himself to provide for it. So now when Allah has taken it on Himself to provide, then you have some doubts and reservation about myself, that is Allah Ta'ala providing for me or not. So when you have got some doubts, that means you don't believe in this verse as you're supposed to be believing. One person came to spend the night at some masjid. Right? In the old days, they went to these hotels and all these type of things. So if you're traveling in an area, so you'll put over at a masjid. So the Imam Sahib reminded him, by can't be staying here, you know, you better do something for a living. You know, don't come and stay in the masjid. It reminded him for the first time, second time, the third time. When he reminded him for the third time, so he said, you see, I've got an arrangement with a Jew that's outside there, that he'll provide 2 loaves of bread for me every day. And I said, then you can, you may sit here. Sorry, no problem, you can stay as long as you want. So this pious person tells him, what a pity that the Jew made a promise and you trust him. Allah Pak made a promise to Mamin Dabbatin fil ard, and you don't trust him. So it is their frame of mind, how they think, how they see things, how they view things, how they understand things. We understand them to be closest to Allah Ta'ala, closest to the Quran, closest to the Hadith, closest to Rasulullah Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So their understanding will be better, their thought will be better, they will see things better. Yeah, I was thinking some days now, carrying on, that there's a lot of confusion in a woman's attire and a woman's function. What is her attire and what's her function? So obviously if you look back, you trace back, you'll get a better idea. And then just seeing what's contemporary. So you're contemporary, then you can't get a good idea. But you see back, then you get an idea, alright, a Muslim woman, this is how she is supposed to be. Contemporary, why? Because a lot of things have been confused, diluted, mixed up. Sometimes mixed up with Westernism, sometimes modernism, sometimes with Christianity. A lot of things they mixed it up with. But then, it is our duty to go back again, come back to the original. With all the confusion, with all the mess up, and all the mix up. Imam Muslim rahmatullah alayhi, when he writes the introduction of his kitab, and he speaks about how the muhaddithin min kulli khalfin aduluhu yanfi, they remove all the extras and all that has come up, all the innovations, all the introductions, all the things that they've added up, how they sift it out. So we'll have to see something of the original nature, to be able to sift it out. If there isn't an example, can we sift out? So we see something that's of the original type, then can we sift it out, the wrong from the right, the additions from the original. So when you see the woman original, right, then there were 4 things that were prominent in her. One was, her clothing was flowing. It wasn't short. Now, the trend is to shorten the clothing. First they brought into a miniskirt, then from the miniskirt they progressed, they brought it right to the waist now, right to the waist. So the whole style, the outlook is now to shorten the clothing. And the original style was flowing clothing. Right? And then when we were small, I talked about, I would say, grade 4, grade 5 or 6 or 7, Right? So you wouldn't see any woman wearing a shirt. You know, it was like unimaginable to see a woman wearing a shirt. In fact, even later, maybe late 8 or late 9 or so, I never seen, I can't remember. This thing came later on. That means the original attire, original clothing of a woman was something that was flowing. Like how you get kurtas, flowing kurtas. The second thing that was quite conspicuous and quite visible in a woman was any woman of nobility. Woman of nobility, some respect that she's got, then she's wearing loose clothing. It's flowing, then it's loose. It's not body hugging. And then when I trace back the days that I used to be in the shop, at, you know, a small child, I can see even blacks or whoever, but their clothing was loose. It wasn't body hugging. They were wearing flowing clothing, and their clothing was loose. It wasn't, couldn't see the contours, right? So that was the second thing that was very prominent. One is, it was flowing. One it was loose, right? The third thing that was quite prominent in a woman's attire was her head was covered. You look at the Western world, then you will find all pictures, not supposed to be seen, but all pictures, and they got some big caps, big hats women are wearing, right? They aren't going out in public places without something covering their heads. So if you look at a photo, say the 1800s somewhere, right? All pictures somewhere has got, and they got some type of a cap for a woman to wear as she's going outside. In our local blacks, it was that as the girl comes to about 12, 14 years of age, and she's wearing a scarf, got a certain style of wearing it, but there was that concept of covering the head. Look in India, back in India, then as the girl is coming up of age, she also is covering her head. Up to now, non-Muslim also, in the more conservative non-Muslim, then she's covering her head. So it was like the standard across the board. Muslim, non-Muslim, Christian, Hindu, black, white, brown, whoever. But it was a standard across the board to cover the head, to keep the head covered. So that was the third thing that was quite prominent. The fourth thing that was quite common also was they would apply perfume or more attractive clothing in the presence of women or their husbands. If it was perfume that they wore, or it was even more attractive clothing, then it was within women, right? Women now, each day they all wear somewhere, so they must show the jewelry and they must show the Eid dress and all that. They will do that, right? But it was quite common that a woman, this is her dress. Loose, flowing, right, head gear, and wearing of perfume or attractive clothing was in the presence of the woman or the husband. It wasn't like this. Now, if we don't know the origin, then we won't discuss this clothing here. So you see, I'm speaking about get the taste right, the zook right. Now, we didn't see the origin, what was it, how they dressed up, right? So I ask you, won't a person living in a Western world, won't his mind be confused? His mind is generally confused. Right? Forget the rest. One alim came here. You see, I don't like this Indian style dresses, long flowing dresses and all that. They must wear shirts and jeans and all. Look smart. But now see how the minds just get confused. The mind gets confused. He's seeing this, he doesn't know what is the origin. Right? When he doesn't know the origin, then his mind also is warped. And he feels, and he will feel like this, that that's the right, that's the standard. Right? That original clothing is not the original clothing. Right? Then you have this in the woman, right? Nine out of ten women usually sew their own dresses. Right? It's loose, it's flowing, and sewn at home. Now, when you move away from this, right, move away from this, now the woman has to go to a tailor to get her dress sewn. Now, obviously, this tailor is going to take the measurement, right? He's going to take the measurement. What is he doing? Is that right? Is that, use your common sense, is that in accordance to modesty? Is it shame? Yeah? He'll have to see the body, he'll have to do the measurements from all areas, from the top, from the chest, from the waist, then he has to see the thigh, how long. All this he'll have to do. So the original way was that woman was doing her dresses at home. And when she's doing her dresses at home, then isn't there the aspect of modesty? Isn't there the element of shame? I mean, move that away from the womb, what happens? So one is the dress of the woman, what it was, and what it should be. Then what happened was that our people got exposed to two things. One is they got exposed to secular education, right? Then they saw the need, all right, girls also must take up secular education, right? They saw the need for that. Then they got exposed to the media. So there's two fronts. One front is the media, one front is the education. Now that education was so much entrenched into the individual that the child, no matter what, but he must go to school. Boy or girl, but she or he must go to school. So it's so deeply entrenched, can't be not going to school. And they will play this up again, and then if something happens, then what? In other words, implying that if there's a divorce or something, the wife becomes a widow, then what? Not trying to understand that this creation of woman is not in the 21st century. From Adam Ali Sam's time, right? And in those bygone days, the girls going to school. If you go and trace your histories, right? Say 150 years ago, 100 years ago, see where they went to school. But then they made good women, good mothers, they reared the children well, they brought them up, they did everything what was supposed to be doing. Now, if a talk is being given now, see, or someone speaks about it or writes about it, then the style is just a patch-up, all right? Do this. It's just a patch-up. But we're not trying to bring them to the original, whether it's an educated person or uneducated, learned or not learned, pious or not pious. The effort is not driven to bring them to the origin. See, the stand-up showing of clothing, Agnya is doing it. If it is one old lady is doing it, right, and the young woman is doing, or she's doing half, right, and the small child, not at all, a small child is made to dress with all this type of funky clothing. She's made attractive, funky clothing. Then you hear the abuse, the type of clothing, and then she has to go to grandfather's house, uncle's house, wedding and all that. And then somewhere down the line, and she was abused. Right? And she didn't even realize that she was abused until when she grew up. She said, oh, this uncle did this to me. And that one did this to me. And this one did to me. Then sometimes when she's of age, then she realized, all right, this is what they were doing to me. But the reason, what was the reason? The reason was, one of the more important reason was that they were dressed up like that. Right? They were dressed up. And the second thing is, that woman, that girl, whatever she is, when you're seeing the fitna, then she must be accompanied. Her father, her mother, someone must be accompanying her. She can't be left alone. That the child can't be left alone. They must be accompanied. Right? Because you're seeing people going crazy. Their minds are going off, right? Through pictures, through articles, through media, through schools, all that. Their minds are going off. When their minds are going off, then someone or the other is experimenting one thing and the second thing and the third thing. Some few days back, one psychiatrist was, I listen to this problem quite often. Very often I listen to it. So it wasn't news to me when the psychiatrist spoke to me about it. This is, here the case, a woman is about 45 years of age. So she confided in the psychiatrist. She went for treatment. And the psychiatrist will tell her, obviously, that for me to treat you, you have to tell me your problem. You don't tell me your problem, how much to treat you? I must know the root, I must know the cause, then I can treat you. So she says, when she was young, 8, 9, 10 years of age, then they would go for holidays to the uncle's place. I get Masaji and Fua and Mama and all. She used to go for that. And the uncle used to take advantage of her. I said, I lost taste. I don't have a taste for it because that fear set in my heart from that day when they interfered with me for the first day. Now I'm only 45. I'm married from the age of 18. Till now, I don't have any feeling for that. But I see that whole future of the child is destroyed because of the negligence of the parents. Parents, if they felt, well, you know, it's my child, it's my duty, my responsibility. I must be looking after the child. Child must be supervised by me. Now, the psychiatrist told me this, it wasn't news to me, because I'm going through this all the time, with the phone, sometimes in the mail. You're hearing this news all the time, so it's nothing new. But I ask you, isn't it a negligence from the side of the parents? One is they want to show the child to the funky type of clothing, attractive clothing, and then number two is they leave them unsupervised, and then when this thing happens, then they say, no, my child's... And then they can't go talk about it, because they're afraid now, if you're going to report it, becomes a case, and then my child's future is going to be devastated. I can't even talk about it. See now how they have to just conceal the whole thing. They're afraid now that any proposal is going to come, and they hear about this thing here, then what's going to happen? So it's a cycle now, and then the fathers of the community have to think, all right, are we taking the right direction? Are we in the right or not right? Now this shame and haya is such a thing. To me, when I look at the cases, you know, the cases are coming through. If this thing goes right, then the whole society will bring a tremendous improvement to the community. You know, look at the stats, right? Stats are showing that over 90% of the girls, women that are going to public areas, whether schools, workplaces, offices, professions, right? Over 90% have gone through some experience. They have gone through some experience. Whether it's government departments, what government departments, one person working in a senior government position, right? He tells me that the women that work around there in his office, these are Muslim, are practicing. So he says, they say that we feel very safe with you. So he said, what do you mean you feel safe with me? So you don't come near to me. He said, yeah, no, but you don't touch us, you don't even look at us. And then here, this is like a free environment. Someone is touching, someone is looking, taking glances. And we can't do anything about it because they're working on the same floor and many of them are senior. So we can't even report them. See? But you see this, when you're going to open this door for a woman to come out, then you're exposing them to this type of danger. And you cannot say that you didn't expose them to the danger. So like they are sinful, you are also sinful. Now, the card that is being used, what if something happens? Now, for that fear, for what if something happens, so 90%, over 90% of girls' modesty, shame, is being torn to shreds. Right? And she becomes a plaything for the office. Or the office, or the work environment, whatever, she becomes a plaything. See what happens. So one is the clothing. So if that is right, then she will dress up right. Right? She will understand that that's not my place. So the dressing is right. And the second thing is then to understand what is the function of the woman. One is the dress of the woman, and one is the function of the woman. What is supposed to be the function? So two different things. Both have to be understood. What is a function? What is a clothing, right? So you get in numerous hadiths. Yesterday I was discussing Asma bint Umays radiallahu anha, right? And the function of a woman, right? So some of them go to complain to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. See the taste, you're talking of taste, the frame of mind, right? So they complain to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Ya Rasulullah, men, they can perform namaz in jamaat. They attend the Jummah. They can attend the janazah. They can go out in jihad, right? So, all the jews, they are going out for everything. Jamaat, Jummah, janazah, jihad, they are all going for it. And we can't do these things yet because we have to take care of the homes. And we can't. So we are afraid now that we'll get lost for the salah. All the avenues of sawab, they got it. Jummah, they got it. Jamaat, they got it. Jihad, they got it. Janazah, they got it. And we are stuck in the home. So what about the reward? But now, Nabi Sam gave her the answer when she's obedient and she does her things and all that. So her reward is more or less the same. But ask yourself what prompted her to ask the step of a Christian. Because she knows what is the function of a woman. When she realized that this is my function, I belong to the house, not to the streets, not to the offices, not to the schools, not to any business profession. I don't belong. I don't fit in there. This is my place. I belong to this. She understands that. That's what prompted her to ask this question. If she was walking shoulder to shoulder with a man, I ask you, in your normal frame of mind, would she be prompted to make this type of a question? Will she ask this question? She's prompted to make this type of a question because she knows what's the function, where she belongs to. So, what I'm saying now, sometimes people get answer, they just patch up, alright, as long as you're in parda and all that, it's alright. Now, this type of an exception is an extreme. It's an isolated type, it's an exception to the rule. Let's first finish the function. So what's the function now? One is she belongs to the home. There's no two ways about it. قَرْنَ فِي بُيُوتِكُنَّ. That's your place, you remain there. That's your honor, that's your rule, that's where what you belong to. That's your sovereignty, that's what you belong to. That belongs to you. When it belongs to you, then you must be there. It belongs to you. Someone has to be there in the hive. The queen has to be there. And if the queen is gone, you'll see all the bees, all helter-skelter. Someone will be this side, that side. There's no direction in the hive. So if you want some type of an order, an administration in the hive, then the queen will have to make the sacrifice, leave her picnic, leave her shopping, mauling, brawling, all that, just stay in the house. Right? The queen will have to do it. Someone has to do that. Otherwise, you're not a queen then. Then you're a street woman then. If you're a queen, then you belong to the hive. And the hive, then the woman has to remain in the house. Although it may be a little bit difficult, but I'm showing you zohk. What is the frame of the mind? What's supposed to be the frame of the mind? Where do you belong to? Now she's there at home, right? So then what she'll do at home? You got five functions that she will do. One is, she will take good care of the children. Now she knows, alright, the children are my responsibility, I must take good care of them. Not only feeding and clothing them, feeding, clothing, and washing them, that's an animal's duty. Animal also looks after the feeding, the warmth of the small, And also the cleanliness. You'll see a cat and how it's cleaning. You'll see a monkey in the street to find one big monkey is cleaning the other smaller, pulling out all the lice and all that. So they also worried about that. If you're worried about cleanliness, then animals are doing the same thing. Talking about feeding, they're also doing that to the young. If you're looking at warmth, they're also keeping the young warm, right? So that's an animal duty. Now, there must be something that makes you distinct, that separates man from an animal. You can't put yourself right down to the level of an animal. Well, I'm giving the clothing, I'm giving the food, and I'm giving the warmth. But now that's reducing mankind right to the level of an animal. So she, with all this, she has to teach the values to the children. Now, when she knows that her portfolio, her place is the home, her mind is set, like all the time now, I got my children, and I must share with them right values. When you talk, how do you talk? An elder, how do you talk? How do you avoid a problem, right? What is the importance of halal? How do you distinguish between halal and haram? What are the do's, what are the don'ts? What are the better things, what are not? You'll find that any great man, his mother brought him up. His mother brought him up. She was an outgoing woman. Any leading person, any person that was leading in any field for that matter, but you'll find that the mother was hard and she worked, she sacrificed all her comforts to see to the good of those children. She sacrificed and the children came out. Now both are going out, so what's going to happen to the children? Mind my words. If you want to assign the children to the tembis, you'll get the product of a temba. It's cut and dry, right? You can do that. Just anybody and everybody must look after your child. Right? And then you expect the child to become an angel. It doesn't work out like that. You would have to. See, once you have come to parenthood, now you understand that I'm a parent, right? Then with that parenthood, the responsibility comes in. I am responsible. The father is responsible. The mother is responsible to parent the child. Otherwise, like the child will be answerable to Allah Ta'ala, you will also be answerable. Otherwise, what's the meaning of the verse? Qu anfusakum wa ahlikum nara. What's the meaning? You have to save yourself and you have to save your household. It's not only you. You don't have to save only yourself. But you look after yourself, you look after your children as well. So now, the mother, she's dedicated to doing this. Where's my child? Where's he? Within the madrasa time, out of the madrasa time, what's he doing now? So she's 24/7, she's got that fikr, concern about the child. What's the movement? What he's doing? Where's he? Who's he hanging around? Who are his friends? Right? So that's the fikr all the time. All the time, that's the fikr going on in the mother's mind. Now when the mother is molding the child in that way, won't the child come right? Won't the child know what's modesty, respect, values, etc.? Won't the child know it? She's educating the child, right? So, one is she will groom the child. The child is coming up of age, 9-10 years of age. And then, well, it's a girl, then she will show her what she must do, how she must work around the kitchen, right? Now and then, right, if there's going to be a situation, right, where she has to clean the toilet, she must clean it, right? Because you don't know what the future holds. Sometimes you go in, someone is stuck in America or London. You can't afford to keep a worker there. You should do it yourself. So, if the child wasn't trained up in this way, now you're stuck in that position. Oh, I never do this thing here. How can I do this thing? By whether you like it or not, you'll have to just pull up your sleeves and work. As you won't you have to work? Someone will have to do that work. So the child is trained for her life. It's a girl. What future? What is your future? You will be trained up for that. Now, look at this whole circular education thing, right? They took her from all this thing out. Now, to keep her active, put her into a gym, and then she must participate in some sports. Now, if she's participating in a sports or a gym, can she be good in the house? Can she be a woman that's going to look after? She came the tennis, she came the finals. Then what? What did you do for the house? What did you do for your child? What did you do? Were you an asset for your children? So, what is she supposed to be doing? So now, the whole secular education brought her to health fitness. What? To health fitness. One woman wrote to me, what's wrong? Sunnah slimming. What? She's got a whole gym and sunnah slimming. Say, leave all these things here. Let them do all the slimming in the home. They mustn't come at one point to do all these things here. Because from one thing it will lead to the other. I was a little bit hard towards her. Just, she must be at home. And if she wants to go through some slimming, let it be at home. They mustn't club in any place. Because when they're going to be clubbing, they'll be all women from different backgrounds, right? And one will say, alright, today let's go for coffee. And then the next call will be, let's go to Big Ben. And the third will say, what about the Choti Ben? One thing will just carry on to the other. There will be no end to this thing. So, what's her place? Look at her place. Look at her function. So one is she will look after her children. One is now she'll understand the temperament of the husband. Husband likes this, doesn't like this, this type of food. That so she's got the time to offer her service to her husband. Right? Or he likes this, he doesn't like this, he likes it like this, he doesn't like. Now if it's a working class woman and she has to prepare the meals, hey, just dash into the house quickly, just put this into a micro. Get this prepared and serve it. Is that the right way? The husband also knows, hey, this is the type of food I'm getting, right? Just for the micro, semi-cooked and all that, just heat it up a little bit and prepare that and offer it. Does he find the satisfaction? Does he find the fulfillment? She will find it a respect to do work for others. I saw once I was in the plane, So I saw two old people, right? Man, woman, white. Oh, very old, maybe about 90 years of age. So that woman, she vomited. And the hostess, in so much of respect and love, she went on the floor cleaning everything up. But asked the hostess to do it for her mother. She can't do it for her mother, for her sister, for her father, she can't do it. But now she's so entangled in this whole mindset. She can do it for a stranger and do it with happiness. Same thing, she will do it. But for her own mother, for her sister, for her uncle, for her father, is she prepared to do it? See how the values get all warped, all mixed up. See, that's what they're saying now, that when you come into this place here, get your thinking right. Your thinking is warped. You have to bring that thinking back to the original. What is the original? What was the original righteous people of the past, Sahaba Kiram, Tabi'in? What did they do? How did they conduct themselves? Then, the third thing now, the complaint that the woman will have, alright, but what about the school runs and doing the groceries and all that? What about that? She'll have to go out to do the school runs and to get the groceries. So someone say, I'm sorry, to be abrupt with you, right? To be a little bit abrupt, I'm sorry about it. What is your earning power? It's a private question, but no one, I'll divulge how much? 35,000, 25,000. Hey, how many motor cars you got? One old car you got there and one nice car. So just employ a woman driver, right? A woman driver that's a bit advanced in age, 45, 50, right? 55. Employ one woman, and she does all these rounds. And she will do it happily. Hey, I've got to work. 3,000, 4,000 is too much. They will do all these errands they will do for you. The woman, her mind is so composed and settled. My duty is just around the house, nothing else. The house, my children. My house, my children. Her mind is composed. She's so easy, she's so relaxed. But now she has to go do the school rounds. She must go on for the madrasa rounds. She must go and see the groceries. She must go to the doctor. She must take this one to the dentist. And en route, something happens and then the whole house is devastated. The whole thing is gone. So there is that section in the community that is looking for work, right? They are poor, underprivileged, and they're looking for work. It doesn't cost you 3,000-4,000 rand if you pull out and employ someone. You got the second-hand car, right? You do all these runs for me. Now, how relaxed those women won't feel, and how much of time won't they have on hand to look after their own things? But when we talk in this way, then people bring about isolated incidents, right? See, Shoaib alayhi salam's daughters, they were grazing the animals. It's true, right? Grazing, watering them. They took them out, right? But then the Quran Sharif already speaks about their circumstance. The Quran Sharif, if it's speaking about women leaving the house, it's also speaking about the circumstance they're wearing. Anybody looks into the Quran and finds it. It says, وَأَبُونَا شَيْخٌ كَبِيرٌ. Our father is old and advanced in age. Nobody to take after him. Nobody to take after him, look after him. There was nothing. And then the Quran Sharif also speaks about, right, they're forced, circumstances forced them out of the house. But what degree of shame and modesty they observed. They were seeing to it that their flocks don't mix up with the rest. La nasqi hatta yusdir al-ri'a. We will not water our animals until the shepherds have watered the animals and gone. So they're not mixing up. Now you show me any person that is a woman is outside, are they mixing up or not mixing up? They're mixing up. Here it was under circumstances forced them out. But under the circumstance also, they kept their mark. We are not going to mix up. Circumstances drove us out of the house, but we are not going to mix up. We are going to do our things separately, completely separate. When everything is over, then only we'll do what we need to do. And they show the circumstance, we are Abuna Shaykhun Kabir, right? Sometimes it is, they quote a story, but it's an isolated case. And that's why I say if someone is underprivileged, they can't, then that's the story, that's the precedent for that type of people. But look at the story nicely and see. The Quran Sharif itself bears testimony to the shame. Tamshi al-istihya. The shame, the modesty, the keeping separate, keeping away. All that the Quran Sharif, everything. Circumstances, the shame, the modesty, do not mix up. Everything is Quran Sharif is mentioned. Now then you just mention this in isolation. Isolated case. And is that fair to the Quran? Is it being fair to Islam? You rather come out open card and say, no, I'm doing wrong. There's a hope for you to come right. But now you're trying to justify all these things from the Quran Sharif. Is it right? Are you fair to the Quran Sharif? Sometimes that happens. And sometimes what happens is the hadith of the Quran Sharif is misconstrued. Well, Khadija radiallahu anha, she was a businesswoman. See how they come. Yes, she did business. But how did she do business? Like how you say, Rabbul Mal and Mudarid, that was the case. And now, it's so easy for us to understand. You've got a widow and an old woman, right? And she's got a lump sum. She's got money. So she'll look for some investment and she'll put in. And she'll put into that and get a monthly return from that. Now, I ask you, will she ever risk her shame? Will she risk her modesty? She found one investment, all right? There's an investment going here. I got this amount. Let me just put it. And from the returns, I can sustain myself. So that's what Khadija was doing. Now, the way you come out and say that she was a businesswoman, I ask you, are you misconstruing her? Is it fair to the Hadith? Is it fair to the Quran Sharif? Is it fair to Khadija? Is that fair to the Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? You're doing the wrong. Then to legalize and mix things up, misconstrue things, by, you rather come open cards, you know, I'm wrong. But another thing is that you don't want to leave going to the Ansar fair. You don't want to go to all these places, right? The souks, you don't want to go there. So they make the souk into an Islamic thing. Whereas now that also is so embarrassing what they have done. Because the souks there in the time of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, nearly all of them were called after some kuffar or some Jew. Souk Banu Qaynuqa. What is Banu Qaynuqa? It was a Jewish clan. So the souk of Banu Qaynuqa. That was the thing that was called in that time. Now the Ansar, their contribution to Islam was they made a souk. See how you degrade the whole Ansar. What the Ansar did? What they did is souk. So the souk and all that was a Jewish word. That's why they call it souk Banu Qaynuqa. Or souk al-Qas. All after kuffar names. Nothing to do with Islam. Now just to attract the clientele, men can come there, women, everything is halal. But I ask you, are you mixing and diluting these or not? So you see, you come to this type of place to get the thinking right, understanding right. And at least now first step is you make istighfar. I admit my mistake. After you've admitted your mistake now, alright, now how do I go about correcting? So you make a little bit of muzakara, discuss with the family, wife, children, how do we go right? We need only to go to Jannat. But there must be a starting point. How do we correct? How do we rectify ourselves? Without fight, and I tell people, don't fight, and don't shout. But with some understanding, some muzakara, discussion, etc., there must be a starting point. Allah Baktofi, as you could.